Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger. Fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, try as we might, looks like we have not done a great job of holding off the weather for Saturday as of yet. I guess it's like 100% chance of rain right now. You know, some of you are better at reading the weather forecast than I am. Sounds like it may stop at some point in time during the game. And obviously, these things can also kind of change as you lead up towards kickoff. Sometimes they end up not quite being as bad as they initially seem. But the overall thought here is going to be some rain on Saturday, which does kind of admittedly put a little bit of a, no pun intended, dampening a spirit on our idea of the hashtag best for last for Saturday. What we've been saying is we want Saturday to be an example of Georgia fans' best for the last home game for this great group of 2016 seniors, guys who've meant so much to the program, many of which are part of Kirby Smart's first signing class at UGA. There's a little bit of a historical significance there to that. This group has won a bunch. There's also some juniors here playing their last game there as well. And now you kind of got the weather that just potentially, I don't know, messes all this up a little bit. Obviously, we're going to keep our hopes alive that it doesn't end up being that bad and that the overall spirit of the day for the dog walk and the senior moment there before the start of the game, that everything's the way that it's supposed to. And frankly, that this crowd can be an impact on the game in terms of the noise required for what we think is going to be a big-time SEC atmosphere. And that, you know, let's face it, we saw a game earlier this year against Kentucky where offense was rendered pretty, you know, productivity was rendered pretty rare just on the basis of the fact of how much of a weather impact there was in that game against the Wildcats. Kirby Smart this week, sort of succinct and to the point, kind of aware of the fact there could be some weather in the forecast and that Georgia is doing what it can this week to get ready. Here's what Smart said about that briefly earlier during the week.
Yep, all the time. I mean, we're dealing with it Monday and Tuesday. Not a lot we can do to control that.
So obviously he's not much of a mood to talk about that right now, saying they're going to do what they can to be ready for it, and that some of that means, I guess, wet balls at practice and things along those lines. So they're trying to kind of do all that and kind of be ready to go. And I guess here is kind of my point to Georgia fans in all of this. Now, I realize that this is going to kind of come across as, well, B.A., you're going to be sitting up in the cozy, comfy press box. Who are you to say this to us? And so please hear what I'm saying and don't hear what I'm not saying in all of this. I am not saying if you're a UGA fan, you have an obligation to sort of sit out there in the rain because it's probably going to be cold too. If it's raining in November, it's typically pretty cold. I think Guns N' Roses once wrote a song about that. So, you know, there's obviously the issue with that. However, you don't have an obligation to do anything on Saturday, but I do kind of think you have an opportunity, right? I mean, in other words, if it's wet, but maybe not quite so bad, maybe that's a day to kind of enjoy it, right? Maybe that's a day to say, hey, there's going to come a time in January, February, March, April, May, the rest of the 2020 calendar year, where I'd give anything to be able to be in Athens for a game against Texas A&M. Even if it's not exactly perfect weather, some college football is better than no college football, and college football with kind of nasty weather is still kind of better than the alternative on that. And so I guess with that in mind, my advice would be make the best out of the situation. You know, what started off the week of hashtag best for last was the best atmosphere ever for the Georgia seniors. Now it's maybe make the best of the situation for the last home game of the year and the last home game ever for some Georgia players who have kind of really meant a lot to the program. But on the serious note here, something else that Kirby Smart did kind of mention here this week, which I do think is probably worth talking about a moment. For Georgia fans, there's obviously the issue of, you know, how much does the weather, if it does indeed come, how much does that ruin the day in terms of being out there for the dog walk or seeing the seniors honor before the game? But for some Texas A&M fans who haven't been to Athens before, at least not in their lifetime, most of them, apparently, according to Kirby Smart, he's actually expecting a pretty good showing from the other group of fans. We don't see this a lot anymore. Georgia fans still travel to road games in big numbers every single time. For the most part, that's not quite as in vogue in college football as it used to be. So, for the most part, we've kind of gotten used to, when we see that 600 level at the top of Sanford Stadium, we, for the most part, see Georgia fans sitting there. But on Saturday, at least according to Kirby Smart, he's expecting to see a lot of, is it maroon? A lot of maroon in the building with Texas A&M. And here is kind of what he said about that earlier this week.
I know their fan base is passionate. I mean, from when we played there at Alabama, they bring, I mean, they will, you will see their fan base in Athens because they all want to make this trip, just like it'll be reciprocated when we go there, whenever that is. So Very passionate fan base. It's just sad that that doesn't happen often enough. But, I mean, our conference is big, and we got a lot of good football teams. So it takes time to circle it and go all the way around it. And I'm not really here to debate the 9-game schedule versus the 8-game schedule. It's just that's the way it fell, and that's who we got. I know this. Their team is not intimidated by any environment. Okay, they go to Clemson and play. Right, they go to Tuscaloosa and play every year. They get to play at Auburn every year. They get to play at LSU every other year. I mean, that's not going to be what this game's about. They grew up in Texas high school football. 80% of their team is Texas made. So they got a good football team, and they got a team that's they're going to be in every game they play because they're well coached and they got good football players.
So it sounds like Kirby Smart's expecting the other side to bring a little bit of an atmosphere on Saturday, and I guess that's kind of my point on all this, too. I joke about the weather and the fact that I'll be sitting up there with the rest of the Coastal Elites in the press box on Saturday. But, you know, for the fans who are going to be in the stands, you know, I do think an atmosphere, being able to provide one, making it intense the way that it has been for other Georgia home games this season, Notre Dame comes to mind. Hopefully the weather doesn't completely prohibit that from happening, because I do think Georgia could use a little extra dose of crowd energy on Saturday to deal with an opponent in Texas A&M that's kind of playing better at the right time, getting better as the season goes along. And, you know, looking for that signature win. Georgia's obviously coming off an emotional win at Auburn a week ago. Reminding the players that this is also a big game on Saturday, I think, would be a good thing in terms of also creating that atmosphere there as well, and kind of preventing that temptation to maybe look ahead to the other things that are going to happen, including the SEC championship game there in December. So my hope is that the weather doesn't cause this to be a complete washout on Saturday. And I would never tell Georgia fans they have an obligation to sort of sit through it if it is raining, but I do think Saturday represents an opportunity to make it a hostile environment, much the same way that Jordan Hare was for Georgia late last week. An opportunity to honor some players likely playing in their last home game, seniors definitely doing that, and an opportunity just to appreciate the kind of thing we don't get that very much of. Fall Saturdays in Athens, weather not perfect, but between the hedges is kind of a perfect place to be here in the month of November. So one way or another, rain or shine, I hope you enjoyed on Saturday. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Kroger. Good to have you with us. Live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you on the program today. By the way, speaking of Kroger, a lot of you have big parties coming up. Some of this is work parties. Some of this is, you know, family parties. You know, holiday season just brings a lot of that. But one of the great ways to make your party, no matter what kind of get-together you're having, go better is with a party platter from our friends at Kroger. This includes shrimp platters, veggie trays, meat and cheese trays, starting at just $19.99, which is a great deal on that. You can order online, over the phone, or you can go to your local Kroger deli, and Kroger can kind of get you set up and ready to go with all of that. All these little get-togethers and gatherings this time of year made better with party platters from Kroger, so make sure you check that out at your local Kroger store. We'll have Jeff Sintel here coming up in a moment. We'll do a lot of UGA recruiting talk with Jeff Sintel. Big visitor weekend here for Georgia. Now, we know rain or shine, that goes pretty well because of the advent of the new West End Zone facility. But in terms of the atmosphere those players get to see, once again, we'll let go of the same sentiment we expressed a little earlier in the show. Hopefully the weather doesn't completely prohibit that from happening. Let me talk some more, though, about the game on the field on Saturday for a moment as we go around the doghouse, presented by Merriweather and Tharp. And I guess let me kind of do this two ways. I believe that there are two real key issues facing Georgia in this game in terms of whether or not Georgia wins. That's the first question. And if we stipulate for a moment that it will be a Georgia win, just how easy that win becomes. I think it involves the running game for Texas A&M and the running game, I think, for the Georgia Bulldogs there as well. Let me start with the A&M part of this there here for a moment, because with Isaiah Spiller and that group, they are running the ball better now than they were earlier in the season, and frankly probably running the ball better for the totality in 2019 than maybe they did in the early stages of the Jimbo Fisher era going back to 2018. What has caused that? Why is that? Well, Smart did go into some details about that here this week. This is what Smart had to say.
They're more experienced. They've got more backs playing at a really high level. I felt like the backs were younger than the freshman back. You know, defensively, they really are athletic. They're active. But he's, you know, he's committed to the run game. I mean, their run game, I don't think his last five games, has increased every week for five straight games. That's pretty incredible. Now, when you start talking about the SEC, when you go 100, 125, 150, 200, 300, I mean, he's gone up each and every game. So they're playing really good football right now. And look, they didn't play bad football before. Don't mistake that. They played some really good teams.
So that's Kirby Smart saying, hey, the running game for A&M has gotten better each of the last few weeks. And when the early season, when it was maybe not going so well, doesn't mean they were bad. It just means they were playing good teams, which is one way to kind of discuss this and spin this. However, as I get a little closer to the week, now, admittedly, I am a Georgia fan, so this is kind of the typical path that I follow, that I may be really worried about a game at the beginning of the week, and by the end of the week, I kind of feel better about the game, either because I'm just excited about the fact that it's going to be played, or because of astute analysis. You can decide for yourself which category this kind of falls into, but as we get a little closer to Georgia and Texas A&M on Saturday, I actually kind of find myself feeling a little bit better about Georgia, and frankly, feeling like that the two-touchdown spread now makes a bit more sense to me. At the beginning of the week, I would have told you that line was too high. I didn't see that easy of a win for the Georgia Bulldogs. All of a sudden, now I'm starting to wonder if maybe I kind of undersold UGA at the beginning of the week, because here's the number that really matters to me. Kirby mentions that they're getting better running the football, but that's 221 yards against South Carolina. No easy feat because South Carolina beat Georgia, but nonetheless. That's 238 yards against Texas San Antonio. Obviously, that speaks for itself. That's 234 yards rushing against Mississippi State, 172 against Mississippi. For the most part, these are not top 10 level teams, elite level defenses. Is this a case of A&M getting better running the ball because of who it's been playing? Because I'll give you an example from a couple of the losses this year. Back in September of this year when playing Clemson, that day A&M rushes the football for just 53 total yards against Clemson. All right, so good defense. We know that's what Clemson is. A&M rushes the ball only 53 yards. Home game against Auburn, a real chance to, you know, get a signature win there for Jimbo Fisher. Does not happen. A&M only rushes for 56 yards. Now, beginning of the year, Texas State, that's 246 yards. You know, only 125 yards, though, against Alabama, another game that was lost. Playing Lamar, 223 yards. So this is a Texas A&M team with Jimbo Fisher that how they run it determines how well they play. For the most part, they're not really running the ball against top-flight defenses. They're kind of only running the ball against the weaker teams they play. If that's true against Georgia, then this game obviously won't be close at all, because the one thing I've said over and over again, that the recipe for beating Georgia involves yards on the ground for the opponent. And if A&M can't find that running game against a better defense, something to this point in time really hasn't done all season long, then obviously it's going to be a long day for them, rain or shine, against UGA on Saturday. But the other part of this game that I think is really interesting is the part of this for the Georgia Bulldogs and how UGA establishes its own running game, all of a sudden now playing a defense that's not bad by any stretch, but maybe a little easier than the very impressive front seven from Auburn from a week ago. Now, the guy leading the way on that is Georgia running back DeAndre Swift, possibly overlooked right now by the national media. Smart addressed that topic this week. Here's what Smart had to say.
Yeah, I you could say that. I definitely think he's overlooked within our program. He's not overlooked within the perception of most people that look at these guys, you know, scouts and people like that. They realize how good he is. But we've probably been spoiled by some of the guys we've had, and he's as good as anybody we've had, in my opinion, because he can do it all. I mean, there's no limitation to pass protection, catching the ball, creating, running the ball, vision, toughness. I mean, he checks the box.
So obviously that's a pretty complimentary thing for Kirby Smart to say about DeAndre Swift. And the hope is that'd be able to be put on display against Texas A&M on Saturday. I mean, A&M has certainly given you an opportunity for that this year. They're 10th in the SEC when it comes to rushing plays of 10-plus yards allowed. They've given up 51 on the season. So certain teams getting some of those impressive running plays against A&M, that's happened some. And, you know, take away the weather for a moment. Let's just assume it's dry conditions and the field conditions are pristine for Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium on Saturday. I still feel like the running game is going to matter here. Georgia's ability to limit Texas A&M, which good defenses have done against the Aggies all season long. Georgia's ability to find those 10-plus yard runs, which teams for the most part have had success doing against Texas A&M. I don't care what the weather conditions are on Saturday. That, for me, goes a long way towards determining whether or not Georgia wins this game on Saturday. It's Around the Doghouse. It's presented by Merriweather and Tharp. And obviously, most people would rather talk about anything but the D word, right? I mean, divorce is kind of a scary topic. But as Benjamin Franklin once said, by failing to prepare, you're preparing to fail. That means you got to have a plan in place if this is something you find yourself dealing with. And the great news is that Merriam-Weather and Tharp wants to help you. They've been through these kinds of things thousands of times. They are your source for Georgia divorce. So if you find yourself in a tough situation, if you're worried about your relationship with your children, or you're worried about your finances, if you're worried about anything like that, Merriam-Weather and Tharp can give you that free initial consultation and set you on a path towards making you, your family, your life whole again. But you've got to reach out to them. Take that step to get an advocate on your side. Check them out online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. All right, later on, really cool thing in the news this week involving Herschel Walker. We'll celebrate that here as a part of Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. But before that, we've got some business to take care of. A lot of recruiting news. Georgia hosting a bunch of guys here this weekend. Guy that Georgia's been targeting drops a list of finalists. Dogs among that group. We'll talk about it all next as we welcome in Jeff Sintel. Here's part of Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So, yes, indeed, it is a busy, busy weekend here for the Georgia Bulldogs, hosting a bunch of recruits. And luckily, that West End Zone facility will get plenty of use. That recruiting lounge will get plenty of use, even if, let's face it, the weather's not so dry on the outside. To talk more about that, let's bring in Jeff right now. And I guess, Jeff, if you don't mind, let me kind of start with that visitors list, the expectations for Saturday, and kind of highlight a couple of names in particular. C.J. Stroud, I guess, expected to be there based on what I read in the Dog Nation forum here this week. How real is it, and how is this a flirtation with Georgia, or are they trying to go steady with another quarterback here for the 2020 class? How pivotal is the Stroud visit here this weekend?
Well, Brandon, good morning. And I think there are folks in, you know, that just want to get information out there and draw some clicks. But, you know, my vibe on this man is how viable this is will depend on timing. And C.J. Stroud out of Rancho Cucamonga, California, this timing sets up well with the Jake Fromm narrative. Because if Jake Fromm turns pro, that will be decided after the season. That's just the way that young man goes about his business. But that won't interfere with C.J. Stroud's timeline. And C.J. Stroud has said that he wants to take his decision outlook vector all the way to the old school signing day in February. And by that time, the decision on Fromm will have been made. So then he can either seriously consider Georgia as a come in and compete with Stetson Bennett, Juan Mathis, and Carson Beck for the job, or Jake Fromm returns, and then he's likely looking at a understudy situation there for 1 year. You hear a lot about Ohio State with C.J. Stroud. So, you know, another smart person out there would go, well, if he goes to Ohio State, then he's going to sit behind Justin Fields regardless. I think that's the thing you got to look at. C.J. Stroud, I think Georgia's interest with him is there, and they're on him, and he is expected to not only come visit this weekend, but also come back later for an official visit. I think that Georgia's candidacy there for C.J. Stroud will either escalate or hold serve depending on what Georgia does with the quarterback depth and who returns in 2019. You know, there's also – nobody talks about this because this is a backup quarterback, but I would firmly expect a guy like Nathan Priestley after a year as a preferred walk-on in the Georgia program to maybe have to make some of those decisions that Georgia's, you know, number three did last year, Matthew Downing, who took a lot of road trips, was on the travel roster for all the SEC games. And, you know, Downing recently started a game at TCU. That's how depleted some schools get on their quarterback depth. And I think that's really what matters there. Another curiosity, if you will, Brandon, is learned earlier this morning that Carson Beck will also be back in Athens this weekend for the Texas A&M game. That's the longtime Georgia quarterback commitment. I believe he's the number five pro-style quarterback in the country. Had a resurgent end to his senior season, and Carson Beck's plan is to enroll early at Georgia, but not just that, but show up much like Joshua Braun and be there for bowl practices for Georgia in December once their grades are done and grades are released and they can officially graduate from their high school teams.
Yeah, we've seen that would certainly be the kind of thing that we've kind of seen before, and it's a great opportunity to learn about the program and learn about what's going on. I remember Clay Webb last year kind of going through some of those bowl practices there as well. So that does, you know, kind of happen from time to time. And I guess before we kind of move off and talk about something different, you know, how does Beck – how is he impacted by the Stroud news, or how is Stroud impacted by Beck? It sounds like both these guys, based on what Beck has told you before about, you know, maybe apprenticing under Fromm if Fromm returns, and the fact that Stroud was also considering other schools where he's not likely to be the starter for next season, it sounds like they're both okay with not being freshman first-year starters. I don't want to read too much into that, but that's sort of the sense that I get of that. And if that's the case, or would they be okay with kind of both postponing a competition with each other for another year? I mean, do we get any sense of how these two guys would potentially feel about each other?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Georgia has kind of let it be known with Beck for a while that a second quarterback was a possibility. I think the Beck kind of team Beck has known about that for at least a couple months. And that just makes sense, man. If there's the uncertain status of Dwan Mathis and his health, and then you've got, you know, does Jake Fromm go pro? Well, here's the reality, Brandon. If Dwan Mathis is not in green light for spring practice in 2020, and then Nathan Priestley might decide to move on to take a full scholarship somewhere else, that's also something to think about as well. So then you've got basically Carson Beck on scholarship next year, and then Stetson Bennett on scholarship next year, and active and up for spring practice. That is a harrowing proposition for any school, much less a school that's competing for national championships and Southeastern Conference championships. I think both of those young men are fine with coming in and competing with another 2020 prospect. I think the thing with Georgia and Stroud and Georgia, a Frommless Georgia, I think that would only make Georgia's candidacy a little bit stronger, heighten the candidacy a little bit. If Fromm moves on to the NFL, then that leaves a wide open competition with both him and Carson Beck and no incumbent starter to think about as well. But, you know, Georgia's been out there to see him. They're making him a priority. And I think the two visits will be very intriguing, whether and how that intersects with the timeline there for CJ Stroud.
I've got another quarterback question I want to ask in a moment. Let me do one more thing on visitors for Saturday before we get there. Zacharius Walker, the big defensive lineman from down in Sly County, also going to take his official visit and then make his college announcement in the week after that, the Thanksgiving week, which is obviously next week. Do we get any kind of sense about how quickly post-UGA visit he might be ready to make his announcement? I guess if you want to be completely objective about this, maybe that depends on how well the UGA official visit goes. But do we have any kind of sense on, within the timeline of next week, just how quickly he might be looking to make an announcement?
Well, Brandon, I think it's trending towards Thanksgiving, man. That's the day when he wants to make his decision. And okay, I'm trying to get Brandon to pound the table on live video here by saying that.
Listen, I've already got my last home game ruined by rain, at least allegedly. The last thing I need is my Thanksgiving dinner ruined. Not that it would – I'd be certainly take it as great news, but my wife would not take it as great news if I was running away from the table at my parents' house to go check on what a 4-star defensive lineman was doing.
Yeah, I would say that that's probably a decision that will come earlier in the week rather than later in the week. Zacharius Walker has kind of had this set path for quite some time where – he wanted to see all these schools, kind of measure them against one another. I mean, he's been to Georgia more than any other school. I remember our interview we had with him that kind of set the table, let me say, in a Thanksgiving theme expression, set the table that Georgia would get the last official visit at bat. He would make his decision in Thanksgiving week when he's around his family and he has a chance to marinate a little bit. I think Zacharius Walker's decision will – well, if I had to speculate on that, I would say I wouldn't expect that to go later on in the week, like the weekend. I would think that might come early, middle part of the week.
All right, so we'll certainly keep our eye on that. You reported this week about Austin Kirksey, the former Walton quarterback, who obviously threw a lot of touchdowns to Dominic Blaylock in his career. I guess was going to go to Nevada, or maybe was at Nevada, and now coming back to the state of Georgia to be a part of UGA's program as a preferred walk-on. And I guess I'm curious to get your thoughts on Kirksey as a player. But even beyond that, you know, I think we've been in an age where coaches would say, hey, we want 3 or 4 scholarship quarterbacks in the program. That's how many we have to have. But in this new age of transfer portal stuff where you saw Joey Gatewood at Auburn and other guys you can probably cite who they're not even content to be a backup really anywhere, it would certainly seem like. It's sort of hard to even hold on to a number two quarterback. The idea of having a scholarship quarterback as your number three guy in a program, is that just passe? Are we done with that in college football where in the future the walk-on, I'm sorry, the third-string guy at Georgia and basically everywhere else as well is going to be sort of a preferred walk-on in the future? Is that where college football is trending on all this?
Well, I think it's a combination of that, Brandon, and it's also just thrifty roster management. I think the only way you can really hold a bunch of dudes in the same quarterback room is if you have a guy that maybe came back home as a transfer, like a graduate transfer, to be the number three. And then you have some true separation between your hot shot, all everything, pro prospect number one. And then maybe the number two is another hot shot that may be a year or two younger than the other guy. So where you have some class separation, I think that's about what you're the only ideal situation going forward. Because, you know, like we just spoke about earlier, a guy like Matthew Downing was getting considered a starter, or was getting a first-team consideration for TCU, which is a pretty strong program because of just the depth and the attrition. One of these things about these high-octane, explosive offenses where everybody spreads everybody out is you basically need to have a running back type of quarterback if you're going to send everybody and you're going to send the backfield and you're not going to have a lot of guys in a max protect or even a chip situation. That's just extra wear and tear on your quarterback. I think a lot of those schools need to have multiple guys underneath an incumbent starter, but it's just going to be really hard for a guy that flashes a lot of ability to stick and stay for a lot of years and kind of hang out. It's almost like the preferred thing is you get a legacy that's like a three-star on scholarship that just realizes, you know, they're not going to play right away. And, you know, the thing with Kurtsey is he's a big body. He's about 6'3", 210, 220. He was an early enrollee, Brandon, at Nevada, so he's already had a lot of practice reps with a D1 program. And unfortunately, that's a little bit of a hardship situation that makes him want to come home and come back to Georgia and be closer to the family. But that's a guy that, you know, it is what it is. This is a three-star recruit who was rated the number 59 overall quarterback in the 2019 class. And I think the thing we can't highlight enough is the way Georgia practices and the way Georgia wants to be good on good a lot with all of its guys, it's just the nature now. You want a talented guy as your number three or number four.
A big-time prospect for the 2020 class has listed Georgia among his finalists. We'll talk to Jeff Sintel about that here in a moment on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. Before that, though, for those of you that do construction work for a living or those of you who have construction workers in your family, let me tell you about an organization that you need to be very well aware of. It's the Atlanta and North Georgia Building Trades Council. Now, the ANGTBC is dedicated to the work and economic stability of organized construction workers throughout North America, creating more work opportunities, living wages, protecting your benefits, also providing you an earn while you learn, no tuition, apprentice training where you can earn as much as $100,000 while serving your apprenticeship. They also offer employer-paid pension and insurance with wages up to 30% higher than non-union workers. The great news is this isn't just for men. Women encouraged to apply there as well. So there are a couple of ways to get in touch here. Make sure you check out the phone number and the website. The number, if you want to dial it, 404-584-0005. That's 404-584-0005, or you can check out this website, angbtc.org. That's angbtc.org. That'll get you in touch with the Atlanta North Georgia Building Trades Council. Now, speaking of building, Georgia looking to continue building its 2020 class, making that a top-flight group. And one of the names we've mentioned before on Before the Hedge is presented by Kroger is Dante Manning, the defensive back out of Kansas City. And Manning has dropped his top five. If you're watching a video, you see that there on your screen. Georgia right in the middle, which is always, I guess, kind of a nice thing to see, flanked by A&M, Oregon, Arizona State, and Oklahoma. Jeff, give me your thoughts on kind of where things stand with Manning here. Top five, pretty late in the process. I know he's recently taken an Oregon visit, and I know you've mentioned before, I believe Oklahoma as being kind of a top pursuer for him. Is Georgia serious with Manning? Is this best player available scenario based on what other guys do? What's the relationship with Manning and UGA?
Well, Manning, it's kind of interesting, Brandon. Let's call this one of those recruitments that's really not a full of surprises, especially if you've been reading DogNation.com for a while. But, you know, that was basically the top five that Dante Manning verbalized to me maybe in early October, where he knew Georgia was going to get his last official visit, and that's still the case. Georgia's going to get his last official visit. The other schools in there, you've got Texas A&M, you've got Oklahoma. He was at one time committed to Oklahoma. Those were his early two official visits he took before the season, and he said he was going to have Texas A&M, Arizona State, Oregon, and Georgia as his final three official visits, and that's what he's doing. This is a really low suspense top five for Dante Manning. He did tell me recently that the December official visit is not scheduled yet, but he knows he's going to go in. He's going to go in December. There's just no specificity to it. But with Manning, I mean, gosh, I'm sure you're playing the video clips of him right now.
Sure.
This is one of those ideal Kirby Smart recruits. He's a guy that's rated as high as the number two cornerback in the country on 24/7 Sports. That's the peer rating. Now, the composite just backs him up to the number 99 overall prospect and the number seven corner in the country. But Brandon, he's a track guy. He's got a lot of speed. He's an adaptable defensive back with length. He's a 10-6-7 guy. Plays on both sides of the ball. I think he's got close to 20 touchdowns all-purpose this year. He told me his favorite highlight on his tape is when he basically puts an old Jake the Snake Roberts DDT on somebody as a tackle. all these things, man, they check the box of what Kirby Smart looks for in defensive backs. We always stress defensive back recruiting here around these parts because we know that Georgia, to fulfill a lot of the desires of Dog Nation and this ravenous fan base, they're eventually going to be dealing with four and five wide receivers from Ohio State and Clemson and Alabama and LSU in the near future if they want to win those big, big rings and big, big things and even one of Kendall Milton's natties that he has kind of coined the term for us around Dog Nation. They're going to have four to five elite DBs to deal with a lot of these spread offense that like to chuck it around. And Dante Manning would be part of an ideal secondary nickel dime package for Georgia in the future should he choose the Bulldogs. I feel like there's a lot of still attachment there to Oklahoma. I think Oregon made a great impression on him with his recent official visit. It'll be very interesting, Brandon. I know this is maybe a comeback chase for Georgia a little bit, even though that Kirby Smart has been comparing him to Jalen Ramsey for upwards of over a year. And that relationship had started all the way back in his sophomore year. But I think, Brandon, you would much rather have, let's just use the Theo Johnson recruiting timeline. I believe you'd much rather have, if you're in a chase position, you'd much rather have that last official rather than official visit number three or official visit number two. And, I mean, there'll be a lot of things that are settled with Georgia by the time in December when Dante Manning takes his official visit. It'd be very interesting if he takes it in the weekend before the early signing period, because Georgia would know where it would sit with a lot of guys come that time of the recruiting cycle when everything is kind of starting to fall in line there with guys like a lot of those guys on our heads just top targets every week.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably well said, Jeff. Let me do kind of one more thing. You mentioned Kendall Milton a moment ago. Obviously, Milton on our show on Wednesday before the Hedges presented by Kroger mentioned his feelings about Noah Sewell and what it would mean if Sewell came to UGA. Best I can tell, Sewell's state championship is tonight. Beautiful venue for that, Rice-Eccles Stadium there in Salt Lake City, one of the cool environments in college football. Also now, I guess, kind of a cool environment for Utah high school football as well. So one way or another, this is going to end his high school season tonight. Let's assume that Orem wins that game. What happens next? Is it an official visit to Texas A&M? Is it some other kind of announcement? After the state championship game today for Sewell, what happens beyond that?
Well, I'm just going to quote the man himself on his thoughts on that. I think he even shared it publicly on his Instagram story. He thinks his decision will come soon, and the timeline for him will be, does he take any more official visits to check out other schools, or does he feel he's good with everything he knows about Oregon, the familiar, and then the big stage, which is the SEC and Georgia. I think Georgia has done a tremendous job recruiting him. And each week, man, I know I don't kind of get in the voting totals or whatever, but each week for me, Noah Sewell gets closer and closer to that number one spot on the top targets list. When you watch what he's doing in the Utah State playoffs, Noah Sewell he's a guy that, you know, people talk about, they only get excited about these days with Georgia recruiting. Maybe they're a little fat and happy and spoiled where they only want to really get their ears perked up about a guy that could come in and play right away. play immediately for Georgia and already push some really talented rooms. Well, Noah Sewell can do every bit of that. There's just not a lot of guys like him. And I know, Brandon, nothing would make you happier than for Georgia to push you away from Thanksgiving dinner to go talk about one commitment. But can you imagine if you had two commitments to talk about on Thanksgiving Day, man, Brandon? No. That would be one of those where I'm sure you're like, if it would be a Noah Sewell, I'm sure, Brandon, you would have to look at the family and go, guys, this is a five-star here. You know what's got to happen here. And that means no more extra cranberries. That means no more pumpkin pie or sweet potato pie. And the Dog Nation Daily must make his round.
Well, listen, I think nothing would make the pumpkin pie and the pecan pie, and nothing can make it taste better than for Georgia to be able to add two big recruits here coming up pretty soon. Obviously, folks have good hopes out there for Zykevious Walker, and then maybe Noah Sewell not too far behind. I think the Sewell recruitment's a big time battle, but if Georgia could win that one, that would be quite a holiday season indeed. Regardless of what happens on the field the rest of the way with the Dogs, that would just be icing on the cake for what would be a very, very nice 2020 class that Georgia would be able to put together. And I agree with you. When you look at how well Georgia's recruited that linebacker position, Sewell just kind of brings something different to the table. The size to go along with the speed. You know, I wouldn't get into the comparison game between, you know, him and a guy like Mekhi Sherman or other linebackers that Georgia already has in the program who do some slightly different things from a slightly different position fit. But, man, that would be a nice guy to kind of sprinkle in with those other guys that Georgia has brought in as of late. No one's recruited linebackers much better than Georgia has as of late, and Sewell will be a nice addition on that. Jeff, we appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily here today, presented by Kroger. Look forward to being with you in Athens tomorrow. Obviously, checking out the forum at forum.dognation.com. Lots of snapshots of recruits having a good time, rain or shine, I guess we'll say that, and lots of intel about a lot of these guys as they head towards that final hour of their decision process. We appreciate you getting us up to date on all that.
Yeah, folks, I think one thing to think about, guys, is that West End zone is going to be big on a night like Saturday night, because previously nobody was going to be able to watch the game. Everybody was going to have to go upstairs and kind of go through some not-so-pristine nooks and crannies of Sanford Stadium to get to an Athletic Association box and kind of watch the game from there. Well, that West End zone takes care of all that stuff now, where if they want to get outside and we can see who the real determined recruits are, the ones that are sitting out there in the rain dealing with all that. Or they can go inside and they can enjoy a nice refreshing beverage, and they can enjoy a lot of food and everything else, and watch the Bulldogs play from a cozy recliner, or even challenge their fellow recruit to an Xbox or a Madden game or something like that while they're watching the game on another screen. I mean, it's the ideal spot now to host recruits. You're going to get to see the dog walk. You're going to look down on the last dog walk. It's going to be a truly special dog walk for a lot of people, for a lot of folks on Saturday. Be very interesting, Brandon, to see who the captain's picks are this week, because I think for me, if you're looking for a way to honor guys that maybe might not be a part of that senior send-off but might also be playing their last game in Sanford Stadium, if they had certain select deserving Bulldogs come out for that captain part, that would be a nice little way to honor those young men as well.
Yeah, it indeed would. Jeff, we appreciate your time. Look forward to getting a chance to speak to you soon.
All right, Brandon. We'll try and stay dry on Saturday, man, with everybody else.
We'll do our best.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, good stuff from Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. Lots of recruiting information from him. Of course, you can get more of that. Forum.dognation.com and dognation.com as we head towards Saturday. And then what could be kind of an interesting few days beyond that as we head towards the start of the early signing period later on in December. But the few weeks between now and then are going to tell a lot about how elite the 2020 class is for the Bulldogs. Let's go cruise around the SEC right now, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And when we talk about cruising, boy, there's no better ship to think about being on right now than the all-new amplified Oasis of the Seas, made bigger and better than ever before, and perfect for your vacation, for your family's vacation, really kind of something for everybody here, whether it be the all-new Ultimate Abyss, which is the tallest water slide at sea. If you're watching on video, you kind of see how that thing kind of winds around there. Just an amazing, fun thing to think about riding on. The Lyman Coconut, which has three stories worth of island vibes, live music, drinks all day and every night, a bionic bar with robotic bartenders, and then, of course, a music hall where you can kind of like dance until you drop, kind of a perfect kind of nightclub environment. But really, every night is something new and something different. Like I said before, no matter who you're taking with you on your cruise vacation, Oasis of the Seas, the all-new amplified ship from Royal Caribbean, really has something for everyone. So to learn more about it, go to RoyalCaribbean.com. And while you're there, allow them to help you get in touch with a travel advisor that can get you set up for an unbelievable cruise vacation. I hope you'll enjoy that. I know you probably need one. I feel like I probably do. Let's go cruising here now with a few of these games for this weekend, kind of brought to you by Royal Caribbean for a moment. And let me start with Arkansas and LSU, where the Tigers have a chance to clinch the SEC West. They are more than 43-point favorites here in this game. And I do expect, for the most part, LSU to play better on Saturday after kind of sleepwalking a little bit in the Ole Miss game a week ago. But if you care about this from a gambling standpoint, the idea of covering 43.5 to me just seems like a lot. You know, Arkansas found itself as more than a 35-point underdog in 17 and 18 to Alabama. Arkansas covered the number in both those cases. LSU has not covered a 35-plus point spread since 2015, to give you an idea of just how rare this big of a number is. This game kind of reminds me a little bit of what you saw a couple weeks ago with Ohio State and Rutgers, where Ohio State was like a 50-point favorite. You know, kind of interim coach situation. You know, nobody really cares that much about beating Rutgers that bad. Ohio State just kind of went about three-quarter speed and ended up winning the game easily, but not by the big number. I could see the LSU situation being much the same way. LSU will play better. They will not be challenged. I don't see them covering 43.5. Let me remind you of something for Tennessee-Missouri, though, that you haven't maybe remembered. These two teams do not like each other very much. And so late in the season, sometimes it can be difficult to know what's the motivation going to be for a game like this. Missouri's played bad as of late. Have they quit on the season? Tennessee has played better as of late. How hungry are they to maybe find a way to 7 wins before the year is done? That's probably a factor in this game. But if you remember, Missouri coach Barry Odom was quite upset with Jeremy Pruitt going back to the offseason because Pruitt allegedly was trying to get some of his players to consider transferring to Tennessee on the basis of the fact they'd been put on NCAA sanctions at Missouri. So I think that motivation factors in for Missouri here. I actually like Missouri in the game. They've been about a 5 or so point favorite here this week. It's easy to forget that based on the analytics tables, Missouri's actually the better of the two teams. Missouri 27th in football power index from ESPN, Tennessee just 35th. Missouri 44th in Football Outsiders FEI, Tennessee just 52nd. So the better team by the analytics playing at home, that's the reason why Missouri's favored. You may say, well, has Missouri quit on the season? I don't think Barry Odom's quitting on a chance to get some retribution against Jeremy Pruitt, especially considering the fact that that there's some fans out there and some maybe boosters around Missouri who would certainly like to see Barry Odom get a win and make folks feel better about the end of that run there. Let me go outside the SEC here just for a moment. The honest truth is, I don't think anybody can slow down Ohio State right now. Penn State's like an 18-point underdog here in this game. Easy to understand when you see the kinds of teams that Penn State's had success against this year, the kinds of teams they've struggled with. When Penn State has been playing better competition this year, we just really haven't seen the best from them. Close game against a 7-win Indiana team recently. So I think we're about to see from Ohio State. I know plenty of people kind of criticize the level of play, the schedule that Ohio State's played thus far. I think that starts to change here with this game against Penn State, road game to close at the regular season against Michigan, and then likely either a Wisconsin or a Minnesota in the Big Ten title game. At that point in time, that'll be some resume wins that a school like Clemson, for instance, won't be able to bring to the table. So keep your eye on Ohio State there in that regard. A couple other things here real quick. Also across the country, I think Baylor hosting Texas is an interesting game. As Baylor tries to bounce back after an awful, awful loss to Oklahoma a week ago, up 28-3, ultimately letting that lead slip away, a total collapse at the hands of the Sooners. Against Texas on Saturday, once again, also on the banks of the Brazos River there, beautiful stadium at McLean Stadium in Waco. My guess is you do see a better performance from the Baylor Bears, and they do something to kind of keep the hopes alive for a rematch against Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game. So I'm thinking about Baylor a little bit there on that one. A couple more national games to mention. I mentioned the Indiana Hoosiers a moment ago. They host Michigan on Saturday. Maybe a better game than you realize. Indiana's probably won more games this season than you realize. But another team in the Big Ten that's, for the most part, beaten up on bad teams, lost to the good teams. Indiana has just not played well against quality opponents here this week. From that standpoint, I don't think they're capable of pulling any kind of upset against Michigan. I actually think the fact that Michigan has Ohio State a week from now probably makes them a little more focused on this road test in Bloomington, because I think they want that game, that huge rivalry game, which with the big TV audience, I think Jim Harbaugh wants that to mean something. And frankly, I think Michigan's probably the right side to be on here with Michigan, Indiana. And then one more thing to kind of keep your mind on from a national perspective. Both of your Pac-12 leaders, Utah and Oregon, both go on the road within the state of Arizona. Now, this is a state that's caused Oregon some problems before. They're about a 2-touchdown or so favorite, slightly more than that, against Arizona State. Utah is a really big favorite at Arizona. Right now, the committee's telling you, based on where they're positioned, that if they can keep winning and then one of them beats the other, that Pac-12 team's going to have a really good chance of making the college football playoff. But that requires handling business in games like this. Let's watch to see if either Utah or Oregon are at all tested this week. We'll make that cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean, with a few national games thrown in there just for a moment. All right, let me do one thing before we kind of finish off with some Texas A&M talk. Kind of one thing from a historic standpoint involving Georgia. I just thought this was kind of cool this week. So obviously college football is celebrating its 150th anniversary, and that means lots of programming and content series dedicated to the history of the sport. Well, the Sporting News recently named Herschel Walker as its greatest player of all time. That's not necessarily a surprise, but Bill Bender, who did the write-up for Walker being named the greatest, I thought what he said was really cool, and I wanted to read this. He says, the fact that the Sporting News 54-person voting panel selected Walker isn't a surprise. The star running back rushed for 5,259 yards, 49 touchdowns from 80 through 82, won the Heisman Trophy, and led the Bulldogs for national championship in 1980. He would be considered on most lists of this sort. But listen to what Bill Bender says. I think it's really cool. He says, it's the margin of victory that surprised us. Walker had the most first-place votes of anyone who voted on this panel, 31 of 54. Also, he was mentioned in the top five on 48 of the 54 ballots, as told by Bill Bender from the Sporting News. So here's what I think is really cool about this. We kind of live in this age where recency bias just dominates, right? What we saw most recently is kind of the thing that seems to cloud the mind of most fans and a lot of the media. Herschel Walker's career is now a long time ago, 80 through 82. But the fact that it's still remembered so fondly by so many people, and that heritage is still preserved by the people who are, I guess, now the caretakers of the history of the sport, I have to say, I think that's a pretty cool thing. So congratulations to Herschel Walker for being named as the Sporting News, the greatest college football player of the last 150 years, and who are any of us to argue with that? All right, with that said, let's kind of bring ourselves back to the present date here for a moment. Obviously getting ready for Georgia and Texas A&M on Saturday, and that means thinking about everything that's going to go down there with our Kroger kickoff. Let me kind of set the stage for our broadcast schedule for this weekend. It starts with our Kroger kickoff pregame show. We'll be there in the Tate parking lot before the game. Around 1:15 or so, we'll be there. Hopefully, rain or shine, able to deliver you some dog walk coverage, and we'll see just how much precipitation is falling as you get ready to do that there. But it'll be the final dog walk for a lot of guys, so we want to honor them there in that moment. Around 1:15 p.m., we hope to be on the air. And then it's the Dogs and the Aggies at 3:30 p.m. Of course, CBS is your TV for that. High temperature, 64 degrees. The current expectation is 100% chance of rain. We'll see how deep into the day that ends up lasting. Do we have rainy conditions during the game, or has the rain stopped then? That'll be a question we want to ask. And then, of course, the Pella Window postgame show immediately after the game from the UGA bookstore. And as you think about the Kroger kickoff, think about our friends at Kroger. And a really cool thing, speaking of the history of Georgia football, bringing in the legendary coach Vince Dooley for a book signing tour. 10 stops at various Krogers throughout the Atlanta area during the holiday season. The first one coming up on Wednesday, November 27th, my hometown of Gainesville, at the Kroger at 1931 Jesse Jewell Parkway. That's the first one on November 27th. For the other dates, including stops in Roswell, Marietta, Rome, Dallas, Macon, Buford, you can check out dognation.com. Right up there at the top of the page, there is a link to the Vince Dooley book signing, courtesy of our friends at Kroger. All 10 locations in the Atlanta area, you can find them all there. The first one coming up in Gainesville on November 27th. So check out more of that at dognation.com. And by the way, as we get ready to wrap up here on today's program, let me give a quick shout out for a moment. I thought it was really cool on Monday that Georgia honored the career of Murray Poole. Murray's a guy that's been doing great sports coverage, sports writing in our state for more than 50 years, and on Monday, he was given a 54 jersey from Georgia to honor his 54 years of covering the Dogs and covering sports in Georgia. Murray's a guy that I'm lucky enough to call a friend, and I just think that he's just a great figure, one of those guys that you look forward to seeing. in Athens each and every single Saturday. And this is his last year covering the Dogs on kind of a full-time basis. And so I wanted to give a quick shout-out to Murray for an incredible career. Really cool that Georgia honored him the way that he did. So congratulations to Murray Poole. Also, don't forget to use the promo code DOGNATION at MyBookie to get a big first deposit bonus when you make some bets here this weekend with them. And Gator Hater Updater, how about 1,119 days? We'll see you back here on Monday, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.